The Ravens spoiled us last week with a 38-6 shellacking of the Detroit Lions. But in week 8, 31-24 over the Arizona Cardinals, a bit of a buzzkill. Welcome to the Ravens Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Samuel Njoku. The Ravens making 3 straight wins. 2 against NFC opponents, where we know Lamar Jackson has been very, very good. They win against the Arizona Cardinals again, 31-24. We'll talk all about that game, all about what went down, what I liked and what I didn't like. And we'll move forward to the Seattle Seahawks as they come into Baltimore. We'll also have Kevin Ostreicher, who's the writer for USA Today via Ravens Wire, join us and talk all about his thoughts on the Ravens win against the Arizona Cardinals and look ahead again to the Seattle Seahawks and what he may think will happen in that pivotal contest in week 9. But first, Ravens get it done. Maybe not to the way the Ravens fans were hoping for. You know, they just beat the Detroit Lions by 32 points. You know, spirits are running high. Expectations are through the roof. You know, Ravens are a team that really spoil their fans. You know, much like the Kansas City Chiefs sometimes. And the Buffalo Bills are getting that a little taste of that spoiledness when it comes to what they expect from their franchise. But not many teams in the National Football League are spoiled the way the Ravens fans are. And listen, the Ravens definitely earned that win. I know I said 31-24, but let's be serious. The Ravens were never really in jeopardy of losing that game. The Cardinals scored about 9-10 points in garbage time. I think it was 11 points, actually, in garbage time in the closing minutes, trying to make that very unlikely comeback. But really, the Ravens dominated throughout the game. The Cardinals scored first, and really the Ravens didn't look back after that. But there's some things that happened during that game that I wasn't too impressed with, wasn't too happy with, and there are things in that game that I was very, very, very excited about. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, let's talk about something that, you know, wasn't very... Well, we've been talking about it for a couple of weeks now. In fact, not a couple of weeks, maybe throughout the season. And that's the Ravens' inconsistency on offense. And that reared its ugly head again. Now, against a team like the Arizona Cardinals, that really doesn't matter. You know, and no disrespect to the Cardinals are a very good football team. And of course, if you were just paying attention to records, you're a bit disappointed by the outcome. But if you paid attention to the Cardinals throughout the season, they play their teams tough. Even the Seattle Seahawks, who are coming to town this week, they play them tough. That team is ready to go. That defense is flying. They're one or two pieces away from being playoff contenders. I'm telling you, it might not be Kyler Murray that's the piece missing, but they know that they're just one or two players, exceptional players, away from fighting for a playoff spot. So I'm not surprised by the way the Cardinals fought. I'm not surprised by the outcome. I figured the Ravens would win. I think I had a 27-13, and that's pretty much how the game went. You know, I feel like the Ravens were about 2 touchdowns better than the Arizona Cardinals that day. And besides a little lapse by Nelson Aguilar with the onside kick, that's pretty much what the game was. But yeah, again, the offense of the Ravens has been a little inconsistent. And by a little, I mean very much so. I mean, let's be honest. Lamar Jackson did not look as sharp as he did in previous weeks. Now, the Lions came into the game last week and played man coverage, blitzing. They were like, okay, my guys against your guys, let's see who wins. And the Ravens won. They won big time. So the Arizona Cardinals definitely took a different approach, a lot more zone, something that you will need to do against Lamar Jackson. I think the 2019 San Diego, I don't know, were they San Diego then? I think they were Los Angeles. It's called the Los Angeles Chargers in 2019, really went ahead and gave the blueprint for how to attack Lamar. And it's still, even the blueprint is still not enough, really. I mean, if you want to contain Lamar and hope for good things to happen, this is what you do. Something that the Arizona Cardinals did in week 8. They went ahead and really just played a zone coverage. They sent 3 or 4 guys, maybe sometimes 5. They would disguise their defensive coverage, really have Lamar Jackson thinking before throwing the football. And week 8 against the, week 7 against the Detroit Lions, what they did was they played a man coverage and they would blitz him. And the Ravens were just very fortunate that their offensive line was able to give Lamar Jackson enough time, because what you saw against the Arizona Cardinals was that Lamar Jackson was holding on to the football a little too long, and the offensive line didn't give them enough time didn't give him enough time, I should say, to make those pivotal decisions to move the ball down the field efficiently. Now, Lamar Jackson is still Lamar. He made amazing throws, amazing reads with the football. But just those instances where you saw Lamar maybe take a sack that would be fumble, that really wasn't a fumble, it was an incomplete pass. But those types of plays that you saw the Cardinals make was probably due to the Cardinals' defense doing a great job of disguising coverage, making Lamar Jackson make pivotal decisions. If he holds the ball too long, the pass rush is able to get to Lamar. And if he didn't hold the ball long enough, or he maybe looked at the receiver a second too late, the play was pretty much dead. And that's literally how these defenses are attacking Lamar Jackson and have been attacking Lamar since 2020. So what's the difference in this game? Lamar Jackson's still number eight. He's still Superman out there. So he's making plays with his arm, his legs, not to the extent with his legs as he has in previous games, but the threat of him moving the ball with his legs was still evident, and the defense of the Arizona Cardinals were making decisions based on that threat. So that's why you pay the guy the money. That's why you have him on the team, and that's why he's so dangerous and why he will be continue to be dangerous moving forward. Lamar Jackson is still doing big things. Now, there were other players who play pivotal roles. You saw Mark Andrews make his touchdown grab. He's from Arizona, from Scottsdale. They talked a lot about that during the broadcast, about how he came back to his hometown, and he played very well. Gus Edwards made some runs in the goal line, very, very effective in the goal line. The Ravens were able to count on him to move the ball through the end zone and score those touchdowns for him. I believe he had three in that game. So it was business as usual, but the defense stole the show. If you watched it, you saw it. If you see 24 points, a 7-point victory, you're thinking the defense struggled. No, the defense was everywhere. Geno Stone pretty much stole Brandon Stevens' second interception of the day. And after the game, you saw Brandon Stevens on social media saying that he's going to have to catch that fade. And I agree with them. That interception belonged to Brandon Stevens. And Geno Stone said, nope, just in case, I'll take it. I have a contract coming up. We spoke to Engraven last week, and we said that Geno Stone's out of there. Every interception, just add an extra zero to that contract come the offseason. So Geno Stone's doing what he has to do to make an impact for his team and make an impact for his pockets come next season. But Brandon Stevens played well again. I mean, woof. Again, this defensive backfield that the Ravens possess is full of unknown guys out the streets. You wouldn't see NFL franchise clamoring for these guys, but they're making plays, play after play after play. I mean, it's been fantastic to see. So with guys like Marcus Williams nursing that hamstring injury, still dealing with, I think, a little bit with a shoulder injury, Kyle Hamilton in the second year, still going through the progression of learning the defense. These guys are stepping up in a great way. I mean, I can't even speak highly enough about how well these guys are playing. Now, they are the Arizona Cardinals, so let's not throw too much purple Kool-Aid into the cup. Let's not sip too much of that, because they are the Cardinals. But as I mentioned before, that's a great team right there. That's a great team win. And performances like you saw from the defensive backs of the Ravens is going to pay dividends in January, I'm telling you. The Ravens don't play the Chiefs this year in the regular season. I don't believe the Ravens play the Bills this year in the regular season. So those two teams who I think will be there come January, those two high-octane offenses that Ravens fans, I'm sure, are worried about. The Ravens won't get that test, but they'll get these types of matchups against NFC teams. And I'm telling you, these type of performances are going to pay dividends later on. Now, as we move forward, we got to talk a little bit about the trade deadline. Now, this is being recorded on October 30th, which is a Monday. The trade deadline is on the 31st, so I will leave a disclaimer in this video if the Ravens happen to make a trade, but it's looking like the Ravens are not going to be able to make one. And the one that was really talked about was Derrick Henry of the Tennessee Titans, and the Titans went ahead and won their game on Sunday. So, you know, wins of that nature always makes it a little more difficult to make a trade, but from what I understand, from what we're hearing from sources, and what a couple of other media outlets have reported, is that the Ravens were very close. Very, very close. I mean, very close, guys. Very close to getting Derrick Henry. And if they had brought him in, that is a luxury of epic proportions. Now, Gus Edwards has done a great job. Justice Hill, when given the opportunity, has moved the ball very well. But to have a guy of Derrick Henry's stature in the same field, on the same team, as the greatest running quarterback in the history of the National Football League is cheating. It's cheating. And the Ravens realized that. They saw an opportunity. They asked a question. The Titans gave them an answer. They were like, maybe they're interested. Words were exchanged. Numbers were exchanged. Draft picks potentially were exchanged. But at the end of the day, it looks as though the Titans will be keeping Derrick Henry for the rest of the 2023 season. Now, again, this is recording them on Monday. Trade deadline's on Tuesday. A lot could change. Eric DaCosta is very good at making these decisions. Very good at pulling the trigger. He's not afraid. He's not scared. I swear, he's been in Baltimore so long, he's adopted that personality. He's not scared, guys. So I say this with pretty open confidence that the trade isn't going to happen, but I would not be surprised if somehow this man, Eric DaCosta, went ahead and pulled the trigger on that, somehow convincing the Titans ownership to let go of one of the greatest running backs in the history of the game. But speaking on the trades, like, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because the Ravens understand. Watch the other teams in the NFL. I just mentioned the Kansas City Chiefs lost to the Denver Broncos. They're 6-2. The Miami Dolphins, 6-2. The Baltimore Ravens, 6-2. The Ravens are at the level of the best teams in the NFL. Now, when I mentioned the Ravens are going to win the Super Bowl, I wasn't just saying that, guys, because this is a Ravens Talk podcast. I'm saying this because the evidence is out there. The roster makeup, the coaching staff, my gut feeling, which is 9 times out of 10, always right. The Ravens are looking really, really good this season. And as shown, now, I mentioned the inconsistencies on offense. When you go up against a team like Kansas City, don't be surprised if you're down 7-0, 10-0, 14-0 in the game. And you need the consistency of attack on the offensive side of the football to come at you, to be available. Because the defense is playing lights out. Now, I'm not saying it's National Football League. There could be lapses. The Vonta Ravens defense could give up 400 yards next week against the Seahawks. Who knows? It could happen. But they have been consistent. They can afford a mistake. I mean, in the scheme of public perception, they can't afford to mess up because the Ravens are really leaning on the defense to make plays in order to win these games. But just to say, I mean, the Ravens offense needs to kick it up because they see Eric DaCosta, John Harbaugh, Steve Bisciotti. They see the opportunity laid out in front of them. The chance at a third Lombardi trophy is within reach for the Ravens. And all it takes is a little consistency. You don't have to put up 38 points against the best defense every week. You don't have to throw for 5 touchdowns or 4 touchdowns. No picks. You just have to be consistent. Consistently moving the football down the field, making catches, leaving the mental errors in the sideline. Don't bring it on that field. Keep the mental errors away. Come out, play mistake-free football. Consistently putting points on the scoreboard. Consistently moving the ball downfield. Shifting field position so that your defense can make the plays that they seem to be making on a daily basis. I mean, let's be real. And that's how you win football games. That's why the Ravens are 6-2 right now. And that's going to move them to possibly 15-2 and their number one seed. I mean, come on. They just beat the best team in the NFC. The Kansas City Chiefs are looking a little lackluster. There really hasn't been a team that has really shown me that they can go toe-to-toe with the Ravens as of yet, especially in the AFC. Maybe the Jacksonville Jaguars, maybe they're looking kind of good. I'm not going to totally count out the Chiefs, but there's chinks to that armor. Of course, Patrick Mahomes was sick leading that to that game, and Andy Reid wasn't going to use that as an excuse, but it's available to use if you're in the public. That's the perception that I'm sure a lot of people are going to have. But the Ravens are as good as any team in the NFL, and they just need to be remain consistent, 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 consistent. I thought this was going to be trending in that direction after that huge win against the Lions, but not so much. There was some inconsistencies, and I think they'll bounce back. This is just my perception of the game 24 hours afterwards. This is me just thinking through the lens of a biased observer, analyst of the game. The Ravens didn't look great. They look good enough to win, and that's going to be good enough for the coaching staff, good enough to players, and I'm sure good enough for the fans. So 6-2 is where they stand. Before we move on to our first break, I want to mention something that I believe is really, concerning, but interesting. I think this would be bigger news, especially in the local media, but it hasn't really been as such. And that's the case of Tyus Bowser. Now, if you've been paying attention throughout the season, Tyus Bowser has been in the NFI. He hasn't been with the team as far as practicing goes. He's not really, there's no timetable for his return. And it's been interesting because if you paid attention to what John Harbaugh has said in previous weeks, read between the lines. It seems as though there's some, at least at the time, there was some friction between coaching staff and training staff and player. Very similar to what happened with Lamar Jackson last year. Now, of course, Tyus Bowser dealing with a knee injury. From what I understand, coaching staff, and there's some people within the organization who believes that Tyus Bowser should be playing right now. That Tyus Bowser should be on the field playing for the Ravens today. Well, not today, but, you know, on Sundays. Give me a rest. Tyus Bowser disagrees, and he feels as though his knee is not yet fully healed. He wants to be out there, he says. In fact, he was on a show with Glenn Clark and my friend Rita. Both of them are friends, but you know what I mean. He was on a show with them and his Tyus Bowser show. And Glenn Clark, to his credit, just went ahead and asked him, "What's going on? Are you playing? What's the synopsis on your return? Things of that nature." And he was upfront. He said, "You know, if I be out there, I would be out there, but I'm not." And that was a reaction to John Harbaugh stating that maybe media members should be talking to Tyus about his availability. And reading between the lines, I mean, I have sources, guys. I'm not going to toot my own horn. I'm not really a journalist anymore. But there's guys within the organization who believe that Tyus Bowser should be playing. And Tyus Bowser disagrees. Now, to John Harbaugh's credit, he was a little more lax this week. In fact, on Monday, he spoke to reporters and said that he's very optimistic. Tyus Bowser could be back. He even admitted that that knee's been a little angry, his words. That knee's been angry sometimes, and he doesn't know, you know, which way it could go one way or another. But he has optimism in the fact that Tyus Bowser will be back. He actually said he spoke with Tyus directly the week prior. So things are looking positive if you're a Ravens fan hoping for Tyus Bowser to return this season. But definitely something to keep an eye on. That Tyus Bowser situation is eerily similar to Lamar Jackson's situation. And maybe Tyus Bowser is looking for a contract coming up in a short amount of time. And he doesn't want to harm himself or risk further injury. And you know me, I'm always going to side with the player. Your body is your business. If you feel as though if you're even 1% unsure about whether or not you can perform to the best of your ability, if you're even 1% unsure about whether or not you can go out there without risking further injury to yourself, you don't owe it to the Ravens or anybody to go out there and hurt yourself. Because what are they going to do? They're going to settle. They're going to do an injury settlement, as they call it, and shoo you on the other way. You know, at the end of the day, as much as fans love for players to play for the name in front of their jersey, these guys are playing for the name on the back of their jersey. And that's Bowser. He has a family to take care of. I'm always going to side with the player when it comes to that type of stuff. So I hope Bowser does what he needs to do to be healthy for himself, as well as, you know, pay dividends and get out there for his teammates and the football team and the Ravens fans and all that political jargon. But for the most part, do you, Bowser. Get your knee right. Get yourself ready to go, because you got a family to feed. You got a contract to sign, and you were trending in the right direction heading into the season. So as long as you continue to perform, and I believe whenever he comes back, he will. He looks like a stud. Then he'll be ready, and the Ravens will welcome him with open arms. We come back, we'll have Kevin Ostreicher, who's the writer for Ravens Wire via USA Today. He's going to go back and talk all about that Ravens win against the Arizona Cardinals, and we'll look ahead to the Seattle Seahawks versus Ravens pivotal matchup, AFC-NFC matchup, and we'll see what he has to say next on the Ravens Talk Podcast. Welcome back to the Ravens Talk Podcast. We have with us Kevin Ostreicher, who is the Ravens writer for Ravens Wire via USA Today. Welcome to the podcast, man.
I appreciate you having me on. This is a crazy time for the Ravens. But, you know, I feel like if we had been told the Ravens would be 6-2 through 8 weeks, I think we all would have taken it. Although I know the losses weren't nice. They weren't pretty, but still.
Yeah, I think 6-2, most fans would take it. Especially the fans would think that the Ravens should be 8-0. I didn't really predict an 8-0. I predicted about 7-1 around this time, but 6-2 is still really good, especially considering the injuries that the Ravens have had. Let's talk about this win, because the Ravens win their third straight game after losing against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Hopes were a little bit down. They lost to a lowly team like the Steelers. You know, we lost to the rivals. And so far, the Ravens have picked up huge wins, including a big win against the Lions. But the offense hasn't been consistent. I feel like as if they've been pretty inconsistent throughout the first 8 games of the season. What were your thoughts about the offense in Week 8?
Yeah, you know, I was expecting a little more, as I think most people were, especially because they literally put the Lions in their own house and beat them 38-6. And that was a defense that came in number 2 in the league in rushing, number 6 in the league in passing. And I think everybody wanted to see them have a full 60-minute performance, where before that it was they'd either do really well in the first half and then they wouldn't do well in the second, or they would do well in the second half but then not do well in the first. So for me, I was expecting a little bit more just in terms of the consistency. I think part of it has to do with the fact that guys were so injured early in the season. Like, they went through a lot early on. You know, they lose a ton of guys. And it almost reminded me back in 2021 when it seemed like in training camp they lost almost every offensive lineman for a certain amount of time. Ronnie Stanley, Bradley Bozeman, Alejandro Villanueva was flipping sides all the way across. So it does take a toll. Like, they need to have some level of play together. But at the same time, some of the play calling has been a little suspect. I think that Todd Monken took a little too long to adjust to some of the boxes he saw from the first half to the second half. I also think that some of the trickeration, I was encouraged last week against the Lions, the trickeration, because it felt less forced. I thought early in the season it was just, all right, reverse to Zay Flowers, reverse to Zay Flowers, reverse to Zay Flowers. And they kind of got away from that in Week 7 with the cool Odell Beckham play to open the game and the Keaton Mitchell flip. But then it was in Week 8, reverse Zay Flowers. And there was a Bateman one in there too. I don't want to, you know, totally get that out of the way. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like the consistency needs to come, because now we're entering November. They have to start their peak now. They don't have to peak right now. You want to peak in January. But there has to be a bit more, especially when it comes to play calling. But Lamar, I think, is masking a lot of that right now. Also the defense too, playing out of their mind.
Yeah, I agree with you totally. Lamar is definitely masking a lot of the deficiencies on the offense. And let's talk about that, because the Ravens had that problem in previous seasons and they brought in guys to really alleviate that concern and kind of take the cape off of Superman's back, if you will, and give him some breathing room to just be himself. Now I have to force himself to do everything in order to get the win. They bring in Zay Flowers, who has been pretty much a godsend for the offense. Bring in Nelson Aguilar, of course, and then they brought in OBJ, who hasn't really matriculated himself into the offense the way that many would like. Of course, he had a couple of touchdown would-be grabs that were called back for pass interference, but the Ravens haven't seen, at least the fans haven't seen, this explosion of offense yet from the dynamic wide receiver. Do you see this coming later on, now that you believe that maybe they're going into their peak, or do you think that really there was a waste of money to bring OBJ to the Ravens in the first place?
I don't think it was a waste of money. I mean, I can admit it was an overpay. I think it was, but it was a necessary one, because you want to bring in Odell to, again, have that veteran, you would hope, number one. Obviously, it hasn't turned out that way. Mm-hmm. But I was never expecting him to be like prime New York Odell. That was never the expectation. My prediction before the season was Zay Flowers is going to be the number one receiver on the team by the time the year ended. He was the number one receiver on the team by the time Week 1 ended. It was literally night and day from what everybody was expecting in terms of this receiving group needing some time to gel together. Lamar and Zay were on the same page from day one. But, you know, as you talked about, they wanted to get Lamar guys this offseason, because no disrespect to some of these guys like a Willie Snead or a Seth Roberts or Sammy Watkins, but, you know, Lamar led those guys to playoff berths, to wins. He probably could lead you and I to playoff berths and wins out there.
That would be impressive.
The wide receiver. So I think that this was what was needed, because for all many years, it was, all right, well, the Bills got Stephon Diggs for Josh Allen, and the Cardinals got DeAndre Hopkins and Marquise Brown for Kyler Murray, et cetera, A.J. Brown for Jalen Hurts. But for me, I'd like to see a couple more deep shots down the field. I think they have the ability to be explosive, but we're not necessarily seeing it right now. Lamar has the arm. He has the arm talent, the arm strength. We've seen him do it before. And literally, Zay Flowers has caught a couple of those deep shots. He can be your explosive player. And that's when I say all these reverses to Zay Flowers, you can open him up down the field like we've seen. I think Odell has that to his game still, even though not as much as he did, you know, in the past. Rashad Bateman even can do it. They have Nelson Aguilar, who could be a deep speed guy as long as he's not dropping the passes, which he's been pretty good at that Steelers game. Not so good. But other than that, he's been pretty good about it. So I think there is another, there's another gear. There's another explosive element to them. But I think it's just going to be them continuing to ramp up. But if they can't get it together over the next, I don't know, month or so, they have an opportunity to win now. But coming off of their bye week, they're going to have a rough month. Not saying rough in terms of they're going to lose every game. It's going to be tough in terms of the opponents they play. They can hang with teams like the 49ers and the Dolphins and all those guys, but got to win the games now to give yourself a cushion and maybe later in the season not have as much pressure on your offense where you can work out the rest of those kinks before the playoffs start.
Yeah, right now they're tied with the Chiefs and the Dolphins, and everything's looking good as far as the record's concerned, but you're right. The Ravens need to take those deep shots. Right now, it's death by a thousand cuts with the offense, similarly to what we had in previous seasons with Greg Roman. The only difference now is they have new weapons, and Todd Monken is really doing things that were outside the realm of possibility in previous seasons in order to get it to his playmakers. Let's take away from the offense for a little bit and focus on the defense. Brandon Stevens has looked out of his mind, way more eligible as a cornerback than we would thought in previous seasons. And Geno Stone is coming to his own and possibly playing his way out of Baltimore and into the bank and not M&T Bank with those interceptions that he's had. Can you talk about how Eric DaCosta is able to bring these guys in? Just the level of effort it takes to bring in pretty much no-namers, and now these guys are studs filling in for guys like Marcus Williams and previously an injured Marlon Humphrey.
Yeah, it's been incredible. And it goes back. This team has always been one of those teams that's been known to hit on those late round gems and those diamonds in the rough. And you can go back as far as you want to with those. But recently, especially this season, the Ravens aren't where they are unless their depth stepped up because of how much they went through injury wise early in the season. You talked about Marcus Williams being down, Marlon Humphrey missing the start of the season. Adafe Owe had to leave and he missed some time as well. They were missing a lot of guys on that defensive group, and you have Stevens and Stone. I thought Ronald Darby gave them really good snaps early on in the season. Jadeveon Clowney has looked like a Pro Bowler at this point, although he's missing a couple of sacks out there. I know Marlon Humphrey called him Mr. Almost, but this team is getting contributions from everywhere, and that's scary when you also have Roquan Smith and Patrick Queen playing incredible football, Justin Madubuike having a career breakout season. They're getting it from everyone. So part of the reason I was pretty high on this Ravens roster was I thought that they were pretty deep at most positions, where last season, especially like the wide receiver conversation was huge last year because they didn't really bring anybody in. And it was, we're just going to trust our young guys. And everybody knew what was going to happen if Rashad Bateman went down last year and they lost Bateman and Duvernay. But this year, I thought that they went into it with, we're just going to be deep at almost every, you can't build a perfect roster. I don't think any team can, but they did what they could in most positions so that if they had to go through the injury situation they had gone through pretty much over the last three plus seasons, they would be prepared. And Geno Stone, I mean, he got cut twice by this team his rookie season. He comes back, the Ravens believe in him again, and he does his thing. They find these players, especially, you know, small school guys. Brandon Stevens has changed positions. I think every year he's been in the league, came in the league as a corner. They moved him to safety. They tried him at corner again. They were going to move him back to safety this year, but he had to step in at corner because they were so injured. And he's playing, you mentioned it, an amazing second fiddle to Marlon Humphrey. He honestly might be this guy that prices himself out of Baltimore next season. So It's like this continued cycle of you can't keep everybody. This is a huge year for the Ravens, especially when you get to the offseason with Queen and Madubuike and Stone and Michael Pierce, even, who might have had the best game of his career on Sunday against the Cardinals. They just continue to do it. And I think it helps them that the reputation is, you know, with these undrafted free agents, Keaton Mitchell looks super explosive, hasn't played a ton, but looks super explosive. Guys, I think, want to come to the Ravens because they have a high reputation of churning these guys out and getting guys paid, plus the fact that they're known as a pretty stand-up organization for the most part.
Yeah, and I think that this is what you mentioned is very true, because back in the day, everybody wanted to play with the Ravens. Everybody wanted to get in with Brian Billick, and it seems like with John Harbaugh, he's finally got that that mantra under control, that team energy under control, and now players are clamoring to come to Baltimore again, so it's a very exciting time. Let's move on to the Seahawks, because the Ravens won three straight games, and now they're playing their third straight NFC opponent, and Lamar Jackson's had a lot of success against NFC teams. But the Seahawks bring a different dynamic than most. They have a quarterback in Geno Stones, kind of like Dobbs, more of a higher tier of player than Dobbs, but a mobile quarterback, somebody who can probably give their defense, possibly give their defense trouble. How do you see this game playing out? Do you see the Ravens possibly inking out another win? Do you see some uncertainty with the Ravens offense being a little bit inconsistent?
I think there's going to be a test. I mean, this is kind of, it's almost some of the same storylines that everybody was talking about with Detroit. Seattle's defense has been good this year. They're the third best rushing defense in the league right now. Also the seventh best passing defense. So they've been really good, and they just traded for Leonard Williams from the Giants, and Tyler Linderbaum had some struggles with him when the Ravens faced up with the Giants last year, and that was Lamar's only NFC loss, funny enough. Geno Stone has six interceptions this year, a 2.7% interception ratio or percentage. So I think that this will be a game that the Ravens will have to capitalize with a couple of turnovers. And part of the reason that I do give the Ravens offense a little more credit than I usually would, like for the Cardinals game, is because when the Ravens defense put them in positions, the Ravens executed. The Ravens went 4-for-4 in the red zone in week 8 against the Cardinals. They had gone through some struggles over the Pittsburgh game and the Tennessee game, and there were some wonders about, well, where was that 80% offense we saw in the red zone through weeks 1-4? They have it back. They're, I think, 100% in the red zone. I think they're 9-for-9 or 10-for-10 over the last 2 weeks, yeah. Which the Ravens offenses of the past few years have been some very poor red zone offenses. I know we've talked about that in the past. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's going to be a key red zone game where Seattle has a bunch of playmakers. I mean, they surrounded Geno Smith with DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who I know some Ravens fan was wanting instead of Zay Flowers. And the first round wide receiver class outside of Quentin Johnson has been really good this year. Jordan Addison putting up numbers too. But I think that there has to be some level of a start for the offense early, where I was a little concerned when the Cardinals went down there the way they did and scored. Mm-hmm. And then Lamar throws that ball, and it looks like it's an interception. Rashad Bateman comes back for it, and that's like a game-defining play in the first 5 minutes of the game. So if you can have a couple of those early and force Geno Smith into a couple of mistakes, get pressure. The Seahawks offensive line is a little iffy. Yeah. So I think that if the Ravens can get some pressure, Justin Madubuike get some of that. Ravens can utilize blitzes. Mike McDonald's been incredible this year, and I don't know if he's going to be in Baltimore next year. He might have a head coaching job lined up. I'm not sure. But he's done a great job, and I think that they're an aggressive defense, but it's not the live by the blitz, die by the blitz we saw under Don Martindale. He still utilizes the blitz. He's still an aggressive blitzing coordinator, especially more so than last year, but he utilizes his guys, I think, in a way that's really good. So I think that this is going to be a close game. Now, I said that against Detroit, and it was the blowout of the century, so hopefully it goes that way. But I think that I will, if I had to guess, I would trust the Ravens to continue their momentum. I think that they don't feel good about how that game went on Sunday against the Cardinals. They feel like they played down to them, and they just feel like they left a lot on the table. So I'd expect them to try to bounce back and do it against a good team.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if the Ravens pick up the win. What you mentioned was very, very, very good. The Ravens did not like the way the game ended. I think I saw a clip of Marlon Humphrey talking to Lamar Jackson. You could see by his facial expression, he was not excited about the way things went out. So we'll see. Well, thank you so much, Kevin, for joining us. I appreciate it. You've been a great insight into what's going on with the Ravens roster so far. Tell the folks at home where they can find your stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. It was fun. You can find me over on the Locked On Ravens podcast, where 5 days a week, so more during the season, do live streams after the games and after big news. You can find that anywhere you get your audio podcast, also in video form on YouTube. I also do write over at the Ravens Wire, so you can find my written content over there.
Thanks so much, man. That's Kevin Ostreicher, who's a writer for Ravens Wire via USA Today. Daily content on YouTube with Locked On Ravens, and also on any podcast platform. I listen to his stuff on a daily basis. Very good stuff. I don't know how these guys do it on a daily basis, but I appreciate him having us on. I appreciate you being on, and look forward to having you very soon. When we come back, we'll talk all about the Ravens' big win against the Arizona Cardinals, and we'll pretty much look ahead on what's going to happen with the Seattle Seahawks and give our final thoughts when we turn on the Ravens Talk podcast. Welcome back to the Ravens Talk podcast. That was Kevin Ostreicher with Ravens Wire. Always daily contact, Locked On Ravens podcast. It's phenomenal what he does. And we had Engraven on last week, another guy who posts daily, maybe 2 times a day. These guys are churning content, so very appreciative of him coming on the show and talking all about those Baltimore Ravens. Well, Ravens got the job done against the Cardinals. Now, a third straight NFC matchup. Well, how did the scheduling staff come up with this? I don't know what they were thinking, but three straight NFC games. They won two. Next up is a big test against the Seattle Seahawks, another team with a very strong defense. I mean, Kevin mentioned it. Top 10 on both passing and rushing, especially rushing, could be a huge factor. But do the Ravens have what it takes to get the job done? I don't think so, guys. I just have this inkling in the back of my head that the Seahawks are going to get the job done. I think that it really has to do with the fact that the Ravens have been inconsistent, and that type of play will only get you so far. I think the Ravens may need a loss in order to get their act together. And usually it's the Pittsburgh Steelers loss that does it. I mean, you see it year after year. After the Steelers beat the Ravens kind of get their act together. But I think it might happen a little too early. Might have happened a little too early. So don't be surprised if the Seahawks come out and upset the Ravens. I would not bet on this game if you're a better. I'm certainly not. But again, rushing tiers don't really count for this team. If you play a top five rushing defense like the Seattle Seahawks bring to the table, that doesn't really concern me as much because the Ravens are playing a completely different style of offense when it comes to running the football. I mean, the traditional sense of how they run the football is completely different from the other 31 teams in the NFL. So if the Seahawks have any chance to stop in the run game, they're going to have to do a good job of reading film and pretty much capturing what the Cardinals did well and what they didn't do well, and they have a few short days to do that. So if my mindset, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, well, you're talking like the Ravens should win, the Ravens should win. The Ravens should win. They should get the job done. But something tells me the Ravens are going to fall short just because of how they've been playing with fire the last couple of weeks. Now, hopefully I'm wrong. Maybe Lamar Jackson puts on the cape that we've been talking about, carries the team to victory. Maybe Odell Beckham finally gets his first touchdown grab. Maybe the offense fires on all cylinders. They are at Baltimore. It is M&T Bank Stadium. The fans do get the team fired up. John Harbaugh has mentioned that numerous times, but I don't play with inconsistency. Come to play each and every week like the defense, please. So maybe the Ravens proved me wrong. I thought that the Ravens were going to lose to the Lions or the Bengals. One of those games I thought the Ravens were going to lose, and they actually came out and won. Maybe we'll see it again. Maybe the Ravens get the job done. But if you ask me what my opinion is, I don't see it happening. I think the Seahawks eke by a win. Let's call it 24-23. I mean, I'm thinking the Seahawks win by the skin of their teeth. Now, again, the Ravens have what it takes. They have the offense. They have the roster. They certainly have the defense and the coaching staff to get the win. I just think that the inconsistencies finally catch up to them. Hopefully I'm wrong. We'll find out next week. Thanks again for joining us on the Ravens Talk podcast. Huge following again on Instagram. Love you guys. Love what you guys are doing for the community. We're inching towards 10,000 followers on Instagram. Hopefully you guys are tuning in on YouTube and Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We're really firing things up. We're at the midpoint of the season. I want you guys to really get locked in with the Ravens content and reach out to me if you find anything of mine that you would like me to change, any critiques that you have for the show. I'm always listening for feedback. Again, thank you guys for joining us. We'll see you next week when the Ravens finally take care of business, maybe against the Seahawks. We'll see. If they don't, we'll talk all about it. If they do, I'll admit that I was wrong. Thanks again for joining us on the Ravens Talk podcast. I'll see you next week.